Never been here before, we'd love for you to have a visitor's packet before you leave this morning. You can find one at all three doors of the auditorium if you don't already have one. In that visitor's packet, there's some good information, and there's a visitor's card as well that allows you to talk to us and give us any feedback, any comments, questions, spiritual concerns you have. Let us know if you're interested in the Bible study or something that we can do to help you get closer to God. But we're glad that you are here this morning. This is an exciting time of year as well. School years start to wind down, and a number of our college students have already started trickling back. Saw them this morning. Glad that they are here. I know some of you are looking forward to having your children home for a little bit this summer. And, of course, school's just about out for our high school and younger as well, and graduations are afoot. So it's just a real exciting time of year, and certainly excited and thankful for all the good things that come from that. I've been a good service this morning. Also appreciate the songs Brother Peters chose, especially that last one. Sometimes you can't help but find the ironies in life. You sing a song that keeps on talking about peace, peace, be still, while standing next to Joel. Blessed are the little children. Keep reminding myself that. No, it's a wonderful thing to be here this morning. Glad that you were here. And let's study together for a few minutes. Book of Daniel as a whole is a great book of the Bible. Book of Daniel as a whole is full of very memorable stories that ultimately speak very much to the time and place where we live, in that they are stories about how the people of God have to live when they're outnumbered, how you have to live for God in the midst of a decadent, pagan, and even dying culture. The people of God living in a world that is not just indifferent, but Daniel's day, even actively hostile to the things of God and to the people who serve him. Book of Daniel, Daniel chapter 1, the world tries to force us into its own mold. It tries to force Daniel and his three young friends to learn their language, their literature, gives them new names, tries to remake these young men in their image, the world's image, instead of God's. Stories like in chapter 2, chapter 3, Nebuchadnezzar's golden image and declaring that everybody has to worship it or else. The culture tries to make us worship its gods sometimes. Or Daniel chapter 6, where Daniel is basically, the decrees made that if anybody prays to a different god other than the king, it's a penalty of death. And Daniel has to run that risk when the culture doesn't just tell you that you have to worship and value what it values, but when the world actively tells you not to worship and value the things of God. And of course, in the middle chapters, chapter 4, chapter 5, the story we're going to talk about this morning, the arrogance of the leaders of this age, their arrogance and their pride, and their confidence and their wisdom, their cleverness, their education, their power. If you have your Bible this morning, book of Daniel, Daniel chapter 5. Let's begin reading in verse 1 here just a little bit. Familiar story, I think, for many of us, but one that's good to come back to from time to time and ask once again, how does it connect to our lives? Daniel chapter 5, beginning of verse 1, Belshazzar, the king, held a great feast for 1,000 of his nobles, and he was drinking wine in the presence of the 1,000. And there's a warning right there that nothing good is going on. They're drinking wine, it's a party, out of control, pleasure over prudence. When Belshazzar tasted the wine, he gave orders to bring the gold and silver vessels which Nebuchadnezzar, his father, had taken out of the temple which was in Jerusalem, so that the kings and his nobles, his wives and his concubines, might drink from them. Then they brought the gold vessels that had been taken out of the temple, the house of God which was in Jerusalem, and the king and his nobles, his wives and his concubines, drank from them. And they drank the wine, and they praised the gods of gold and silver, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone. So I want you to get that image there. They are taking the things of God that Nebuchadnezzar, decades before, when he defeated Jerusalem and destroyed the city, God's holy things taken from God's temple, now being used by Belshazzar to worship, in the midst of a pagan party, to worship false gods, his gods, gods of gold, silver, bronze, iron, wood, and stone. In the midst of this blasphemous, pagan pleasure party, suddenly the fingers of a man's hand emerged and began writing opposite the lampstand on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the back of the hand that did the writing. And then the king's face grew pale, and his thoughts alarmed him, and his hip joints went slack, and his knees began knocking together. I love that word suddenly in the telling of the story. Isn't that how it often goes, ladies and gentlemen, when we're living in the world and participating in the things of the world and we've gotten careless and we've gotten comfortable and we're having a great time and we're not thinking about consequences or tomorrow or what might happen, and then it always suddenly happens. Have you been there? You know what I'm talking about? Suddenly happens. Consequences come. God's will not be thwarted forever. And in this case for Belshazzar, suddenly happens. He's been drinking wine. He's been having a good time. He's been getting drunk. He's been taking God's holy things and using them to praise his own gods, taking whole God's holy things and blaspheming with them. I mean, again, catch the dynamic of what's going on. And in just literally three syllables, suddenly, from drunken party to abject terror, from a good time and a great night to knees knocking. And nobody knows what to do. And nobody knows now what to say. Reality has intruded upon the world's way of using pleasure to cloud our thinking and delude our minds and push reality away. And now nobody knows what to do. I mean, of course, the king immediately in verse 7 will call for his conjurers, the Chaldeans, the diviners, the wise men of Babylon. And he'll make a great offer. Whoever can explain what this handwriting on the wall means, I will give you a purple robe and I will put a gold chain on your neck and you can be third ruler right behind me of the kingdom. He offers, in typical worldly fashion, he offers the only things that he thinks people really need or would want anyways. He offers them the world's values. Nice clothes and a nice title and a little wealth on the side. He offers them what only he thinks matters, wealth and power. But none of the wise men could decipher. And so picking up in verse 13, the queen entered the banquet hall because of the words of the king and his nobles. And the queen spoke and said, O king, live forever. Do not let your thoughts alarm you or your face be pale. There is a man in your kingdom in whom is a spirit of the holy gods. And in the days of your father, illumination, insight, and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, were found in him. And King Nebuchadnezzar, your father the king, appointed him chief of the magicians, conjurers, Chaldeans, and diviners. This was because an extraordinary spirit, knowledge and insight, interpretation of dreams, explanation of enigmas, and solving of difficult problems were found in this Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar. Let Daniel now be summoned. He will declare the interpretation. So Daniel was brought in before the king. And the king spoke and said to Daniel, Are you that Daniel who is one of the exiles from Judah, whom my father the king brought from Judah? And stop right there and catch the irony. Are you the Daniel from Judah? The Daniel whose God I've been blaspheming by using his things to worship my gods that got me into this predicament tonight. Are you that Daniel? The Daniel, the captive from Judah. And by the way, I want you to notice, even there, as much as we sometimes talk about Belshazzar's heart, I want you to notice how he demeans Daniel in the address. He's a man who doesn't really realize the full predicament of his situation. Here's the queen praising who he is and what he's done. He is a man in whom are the spirit of the gods, something special about this. This man has connection to the divine. He's wise where our own wise men aren't. He knows things our smartest men don't. He can figure anything out. He solves difficult problems, extraordinary spirit, knowledge, and insight. And all Belshazzar sees, especially after this point of decades of service by Daniel's part to his family, the royal family, are you that Daniel from Judah, the exile, whom my father the king brought from Judah? Well, I've heard about you. There's a spirit of the gods in you, that illumination, insight, extraordinary wisdom have been found in you. Just now, the wise men, the conjurers, were brought in before me that they might read this inscription and make its interpretation known to me. But they could not declare the interpretation of the message. But I have personally heard about you, that you were able to give interpretations and solve difficult problems. Now, if you are able to read the inscription and make its interpretation known to me, you will be clothed with purple, wear a necklace of gold around your neck, and you will have authority as the third ruler in the kingdom. If, Daniel, if you can do this. Decades of service. He's done this kind of thing before. But Belshazzar so in over his head in this story, so given the pleasure in having a good time, that anytime anybody has something to say about what to do, it's always about, well, how it used to be in the days of Nebuchadnezzar, your father, how Nebuchadnezzar used to run it, when Nebuchadnezzar got things done, when Nebuchadnezzar conquered things, when Nebuchadnezzar brought captives, and when Daniel was found to do these great things, and Belshazzar is completely ignorant, almost as it were, hardly fit to fill the shoes of what was actually, in reality, his grandfather, father in a metaphorical sense, the great king and founder of the dynasty in name and power and prestige. So Daniel, if you think you can handle this, and it's almost as though Belshazzar, he doesn't understand who's really on trial here. He's setting up as though Daniel's being put to the test, when in reality, he's the one being tried in this story. As the meaning of mene mene tekel ufarsin makes clear, Belshazzar has to be reminded that Daniel can do this. Daniel makes clear, by the way, in the following verses, he doesn't want Belshazzar's reward. He doesn't see things the way the world sees it. He doesn't play by the world's values. He's not interested in the best the world can offer, wealth and power and authority and prestige. No, Daniel goes on to basically say, beginning of verse 17, keep your gifts for yourself or give your rewards to someone else. However, I will read the inscription to the king and make the interpretation known to him. But before Daniel does this, Daniel then goes in to tell or remind Belshazzar some more of the history of the past that he is apparently ignorant of, if not literally, then certainly in terms of how he's living and the decisions he's making. Belshazzar, before I tell you what these words are and what they mean, let me tell you a story about your grandfather, Nebuchadnezzar. Let me tell you about how cocky he once got, how arrogant he was. Verse 20, his heart was lifted up. His spirit became so proud that he behaved arrogantly, and he was deposed from his royal throne and his glory taken away from him. And he was also driven away from mankind, and his heart was made like that of the beasts. His dwelling place was that with the wild donkeys. And he was given grass to eat like cattle. His body was drenched with the dew of heaven until he recognized that the Most High God is ruler over the realm of mankind and that he sets over it whomever he wishes. And especially in verse 22 beginning. Yet you, his son Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, even though you knew all this. Even though you knew about this God. He'd made himself known to your grandfather, and yet here you are drinking your wine to your gods out of his vessels. You knew all this. But you have exalted yourself against the Lord of heaven, and they have brought the vessels of his house before you. You and your nobles, your wives, your concubines have been drinking wine from them, and you have praised the gods of silver and gold, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone, which do not see, hear, or understand. But the God in whose hand are your life breath and your ways, the God who literally holds your life in his hand, you have not glorified. And so the hand was sent out from him, and this inscription was written out. Yeah, Belshazzar, I can do this. But I want you to understand something. This has happened because you made the same mistake your grandfather made. Whereas he repented and humbled himself and praised the Most High God at the end of chapter 4. You, even though you knew this, you've been just like him, arrogant and proud. You've taken the one true God's things, you have profaned them and blasphemed with them. And then, suddenly, the hand was sent from him, and this inscription was written out. You've set yourself up against the Lord of heaven. You took his holy things. You made them profane. You used your life to pursue godless things. And you actually think it is within your power to dole out purple robes and gold chains and authority? When you don't even know the God in whose hand your life and your ways, even at this very moment, are held. And so, God sends you this message. Now, this is the inscription that was written out. Mene, mene, tekel ufarsin. And this is the interpretation. Mene And I might add, written twice for emphasis, to drive home the point. Like when Jesus would often say, truly, truly, or verily, verily, I say to you. Mene, twice written. Literally from a verb meaning to number or to count. God has numbered your kingdom and put it to an end. Tekel, which was a verb for weighing things. You have been weighed on the scales. God has weighed your life that he holds in your hand, and you are found deficient. In Parsing, he takes it to the singular, peres, from a verb which means to defied. But in a powerful wordplay in their language sounds just like Persian, peras, Persian. Your kingdom has been divided and given over to the Medes and the Persians. God's numbered your kingdom and put it to an end. You have been judged. You've been weighed on the scales. You're found deficient. You think I'm on trial here. If I can do this, this isn't a story about me, Belshazzar. It's a story about you. And your kingdom has been divided and given over to the Medes and Persians. Three words, three facets of a message from God to this king. And even though you and I don't rule over an empire that spans nations and ethnicities, tribes and tongues, you and I, ladies and gentlemen, still very much need to hear the words of God written in judgment to this foolish king, this arrogant king. Number one, Mene. God has numbered your kingdom and put it to an end. That God numbers, that God counts, that God places limits on things. God himself, of course, is beyond limit, without limit. That's why God, for instance, in the old law always says, don't make an image, not just of other gods, no pagan gods. Don't even make an image of me, he says in law. Why? Because to limit, to be able to draw something or sculpt something or picture something is by definition too limited. To count something is to say how much something is. To count is to limit. And I have counted your life out, the life that I hold in my hands. I have numbered your kingdom. I have evaluated, I have limited it. I have put it to an end. It's not real pleasant. It's not real exciting. It's not real happy to think about. Do you understand, ladies and gentlemen, you and I, each of us, we have a number of days set in life. You and I, we are numbered. The Bible talks about the fact in the book of Psalms that David uses the idea of God, before any of my days pass, you have numbered them all. You know the length of my life that span. You have limited me. My life is in your hand. You and I, ladies and gentlemen, we live our lives with a limited amount of time. And I'll tell you, it's important for time and to realize how limited we really are, how much we are numbered. Because what happens in life, ladies and gentlemen, is when we think that we have a lot of something or an unlimited amount of something, you know what we do with it? We waste it. We're careless with it. We don't take it seriously. When you realize that you only have so many days to live, we're not going to be here forever. That we only have 70 years or 75 years or maybe 52 years or maybe 38 years. But that we are numbered. That God places limits on us and that our end comes and then we face God and then we have to give an explanation for who we are and what we've done with our time, our lives, his life. Our things, his things. These aren't your vessels. These are his vessels, Belshazzar. What are you doing with them? And what are you doing with your life? And what are you doing with the kingdom, his kingdom? And yet you and I, ladies and gentlemen, you and I, we go on as though we're going to live forever. We forget the words. The Bible reminds us from Old Testament to New Testament that we are but a vapor which appears for a little while and then vanishes away. And then as Hebrews 9 makes clear, after we die, then comes the judgment. We have been numbered. And for some reason, verses like that, verses that remind us about how finite we are and how short it all really is. For some reason, those aren't the verses, and that's not the concept. For all their frequency in the Bible, Old and New Testament, for all their commonness, those aren't the verses that tend to make it on our refrigerators or under our bumpers or in our hallway hangings. And yet maybe more as much as any point, we need this point, that we have an expiration date. And so here's Belshazzar literally drinking his final hours away. Mene, mene, Belshazzar. You've been numbered and your time is up. And then there's Tekel. You've been weighed and found wanting. Let me ask you something this morning. If God was to look at your life, as he will in the last day for all of us, if God was to look at your life and he was to check how you're spending time and where the allegiance of your heart is and where your true values are and what's most important in your life and how well you're handling your relationships and how well they're faring, how would you be weighed this morning? Because let's be honest. A lot of us, if we're honest, there are things in our life we are not spending our lives well. I mean, let's just stick with the issue of time for a moment. How much time do you spend in front of the TV? You know, as the studies have shown, when you add it all up, literally many people will waste somewhere between 10 and 15 years of their life in front of a glowing screen. Or especially a growing problem these days, how much time are we on the internet, our computer or our phone? We sit in the same room with each other while texting the people who aren't even there. We're obsessed with social media and we spend so much time connecting with people digitally instead of connecting with people who are actually here with us presently. Listen, these things aren't abjectly sinful, but too often we are just too distracted because we're too busy too. We constantly push to cram one more thing into our days thinking we're being efficient and productive when all we are is distracted and harried. Let me ask you a question you need to think seriously about your life, your schedule, especially if you're feeling stressed and too busy and there aren't enough hours in a day. Let me ask you something. Ask yourself, is what I'm cramming into my life, into my hours, is it contributing to my biggest goals and my biggest purposes in life? Is all the stuff that's clouding up my calendar and running my day planner, is it actually contributing to why I'm here? We so need the words of the preacher from Ecclesiastes 4 and verse 6. One handful of rest is better than two fists full of labor and striving after the wind. You've been weighed on the scales and you've been found deficient, Belshazzar. You have wasted your life. You have wasted your position. Even implicit in the language all around the story, it's what Nebuchadnezzar, nobody talks about what Belshazzar did, what Belshazzar accomplished. You've wasted your life, man. And now your time is up. And your kingdom's going to fall. And you are so insignificant that even though literally to this day in secular history the name of Nebuchadnezzar is known, do you realize that one of the arguments, in fact, against the historicity of Daniel for a while is that there were no mentions of Belshazzar in secular history? That's how insignificant he was. Because he was the party king. He was the good time guy. He accomplished nothing. He built nothing. He's the one who lost the kingdom. You have been weighed on the scales and found deficient. What are you doing with the amazing gift of life? Your life, as much as Belshazzar's, your life in the very hand of God. Your ways in his hand. He weighs our lives. What will he say? And then the last one, Perez, divided. Your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. It's amazing how much Belshazzar had willfully chosen to ignore the warning signs. Here's what I mean by that. You got to understand in the ancient world, even in the modern world, you see an invasion coming. Think about the first Gulf War, 1990, 1991. Did Saddam Hussein see us coming? Of course he did. You don't move 250,000 troops in secret, in hiding. That very night, Belshazzar is slain. You know why he could be slain that very night? Because already that very night, while he partied, the Persian army was already at the wall and at the gates. You understand that? He was partying while his enemy was there. He was partying while his enemy was there. Why were they doing that? Well, we don't know for sure. They don't tell us exactly what they were thinking, but I, knowing human nature, you can think of several reasons why they would party even though the enemy army is at the gates. Perhaps they were boasting in their perceived invincibility. Remember how great Babylon was described, these huge walls, an invincible city. Oh, they may be at our walls, but they'll never get in here.
The way we put that today is we talk about when someone tries to warn us about the consequences of who we are and what we're doing, we say, well, it'll never happen to me. It's kind of like Joel not that long ago, he climbed up on something, was walking along the edge, and I said, Joel, you're going to fall. And he said, you're right, I will, and he got down. No. Y'all almost bought that, wow. You know what happened. Otherwise, it's a pointless story. He fell off, and there were tears, and there was crying. And 5 minutes later, guess what happened? He's back up there walking along again. I said, Joel, you're going to fall again. And you know what he said? No, I won't. And that time I picked him off because I didn't want to get in trouble with Amanda. But isn't that how it works? It won't happen to me. Oh, I know this army's been on the prowl and it's conquering cities, but you know what? We're Babylon. We're invincible. And we chuckle at people who are that foolish in history and little boys who are that foolish presently. But you know what? We do the same thing spiritually all the time, don't we? It won't happen to me. The consequences won't find their way back to me. Maybe they were just trying to boost morale. Maybe what Belshazzar was doing was, you know, it looks bad. The city's surrounded. The Persian army's here. But you know what? It's not as bad as it looks. And that's the message he was trying to send. Or maybe it was just nihilistic. Maybe they were just trying to get what they could while they could. Let's eat, drink, and be merry because tomorrow we die. They've beaten us back this far. It's all over. Let's just get what we can while we can. Isn't that what our culture by and large does, ladies and gentlemen? Why our culture has banished death? I think one thing that amuses me, you know, a lot of the McDonald's around here, you know, in the area, whenever I go to one, there's always going to be a flat-screen TV on, and usually either be showing Fox News or CNN. But what's really interesting is the advertisements that they run. You will see advertisements that are typically geared towards the demographic I think is most watching, and typically older retired people. And so they will advertise things about Medicare, and they will advertise things about investments and getting better returns. They will advertise things about home health supplies. But they will never advertise funeral homes. There are no ads for the casket companies. Oh, they're targeting seniors, but in their ads, that's very obvious. But there's never an ad for the embalming practice. Why is that? Well, because in our culture, we very much like Belshazzar, we just party while the enemy's at the gates because we don't want to think about what's outside the walls and what's coming. And so many of us fail to look at the warning signs. Peretz, divided, it sounds just like Persian. Do you realize, Belshazzar, what's happened? What is happening? They're here and they're going to win. And instead, we don't take care of ourselves, and we live on them, and we burn the candle on both ends, and we hurt ourselves, and we wreck our health and our marriage and our children because we fail to look at the spiritual warning signs all around us, that we're trying to do too much with too little, that we're too busy, that we're not putting first things first. And I will ask you, ladies and gentlemen, how much of the sermon is stuff that we already know but we aren't doing? Because this is what happens so often with life. We go through life and we ignore warning signs. Guys, we're especially bad at this, aren't we? We'll be playing a sport or we'll be exercising and some joint pain begins. And we'll sit there and say, well, you know, you just got to play with the pain. And so we'll push through it and we'll push through it until something rips or something tears and then we're on an operating table because we ignored the obvious sign. Because it's not going to happen to me. Have you ever noticed, ladies and gentlemen, when we are not putting first things first, and when we are not living life well, and when we are not recognizing the warning signs, perhaps given by friendly advice, brotherly counsel, we're living too much in the world, too busy with things that don't matter in the grand scheme of eternity. A number of things happen. We tend to become more vulnerable to temptation when we're busy and tired. Have you ever noticed that, ironically? When we're too busy and we become too tired, we become more vulnerable to temptation because we are too busy to pay attention to the things that matter. When we are tired and when we are stressed, we are more vulnerable to certain sin and certain temptations. I'm thinking especially of anger and malice and frustration. We tend to have less control over our emotions. Why isn't we yell at the car next to us? They can't even hear us. And that's what we do. We are never at our best when we are so exhausted, so worn out, so overstretched that we don't have time to think, to meditate, to read God's word, to pray. The very pace of this era in this culture is not spiritually healthy, let alone physically healthy. When in the Bible so often God, for instance, like in Psalm 46 and verse 10, reminds us, cease striving and know that I am God. Sometimes just sit still and look and listen for me. Well, even though Daniel told him he didn't want it, verse 29, Belshazzar, hey, at least he's a man of his word. Belshazzar gave orders, verse 29. They clothed Daniel with the purple and put a necklace of gold around his neck, issued a proclamation concerning him that he had authority as the third ruler in the kingdom. And that same night, Belshazzar, the Chaldean king, was slain. Belshazzar didn't listen. You notice that what's really implied in that? He didn't listen. Daniel says, this stuff doesn't matter. I don't want it. Let me tell you what God says. Belshazzar gives Daniel the most valuable things in his world, and then he's killed. I want you to notice how those two things are juxtaposed. He insists on giving Daniel the most valuable things in his world, the way he sees life, and then he's killed. It's a stark juxtaposition, don't you think? In light of death, in light of the fall of that city and that world as they knew it, and like the fact that all around us we see our society decaying and crumbling, what good is a purple robe and a gold chain and authority from a regime that passes away? And yet too often we're lured by the promise of the exact same types of things today. And especially young people. Young people, listen well as you are forming habits of the heart that will guide you through your life. The popular culture that tells you what's cool and what's not and how to talk and how to dress and how to be. You realize in 10 to 20 years, when you're in your late 30s and early 40s, and there's a whole new crop of teenagers, they're going to be making fun of what you thought was so cool. Have you ever noticed how our culture mocks itself after 10 to 20 years pass? And it's a laugh line. Somebody dresses like they dressed in the 80s. What once was so cool is now a visual sight gag. Hairstyles, musical tastes, TV shows are so retro when once they were cutting edge. Belshazzar tries to cram down Daniel's throat the vestige and the trappings of a world that's passing away. How many other men on any other night would have given anything to have been in Daniel's position gaining those things? How many times do we, ladies and gentlemen, how many times do we so desperately want the things of this world, even as it's passing away and crumbling? The message of the wall, two quick observations, we'll be done for this morning. And we'll be done. Number one, live your life with divine purpose. There's Belshazzar, literally his last night on earth, and he's drinking his time away. How tragic, how ugly. We waste so much time. Even when we're busy, we're wasting time if we haven't used it purposely and intentionally. If we don't have a plan for how we're using our life to God's glory. Listen to what the psalmist says. Psalm 39, beginning in verse 4. The psalmist says, Lord, make me know my end and what is the extent of my days. Let me know how transient I am. Behold, you have made my days as handbreadths, the width of a hand, as it were. My lifetime is nothing in your sight. Surely every man at his breast, at his best, is mere breath. Surely every man walks about as a phantom. Surely they make an uproar for nothing. He amasses riches and does not know who will gather them. Live life with a sense of purpose and urgency. Life is short and it goes quick. Your life is going to be, it's going to be time to weigh your life before you know it. What's the verdict going to be? What's it going to look like? And just as a reminder, these cards are still available in the foyer. We talked at the beginning of this year, living intentionally this year. Some pointers, some ideas, some things to focus on. Think about, use your life well. Doesn't mean you quit your job tomorrow and go and live in the woods or something. But what it does mean is that every decision I make, each and every moment of every day, I have a plan, I have a purpose that's oriented around God's will and the way God sees this life, which is all too short, and the way God sees this world, which is passing away. This story reminds us to live our life with divine purpose because the end comes so quickly and then it's time to be weighed. And related to that, make God's priorities your priorities. Make God's priorities your priorities. Jesus put it this way. Can't get any better than this. A sermon in a sentence, Matthew 6 and verse 33. But seek his kingdom first and his righteousness. And all the things we worry about, what we're going to eat, what we're going to wear, the things that often consume most of our time, most of our attention, and most of our energy. You seek God's way first, his kingdom, his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. Because after all, you can only live in so many square feet at once. You can only wear so many pieces of clothing at the same time. You can only drive so many cars at once, and you only spend so much time in your car anyways. Put God's things first, and what you really need will be taken care of. It's one of those basic principles in life, but we often fail to live this way, that if the most important things get the first and best of our attention, then everything else that really does matter in life tends to fall into place anyways. Again, Psalm 90, beginning of verse 10. As for the days of our life, they contain 70 years, or if due to strength, 80 years. Yet their pride is but labor and sorrow. For soon it is gone, and we fly away. Who understands the power of your anger and your fury according to the fear that is due you? So teach us to number our days, that we may present to you a heart of wisdom. And if you find that after you do the things that are most important first, there are things that you still don't have time or energy for, you know what? Those things probably don't really matter in the eternal scheme anyways. When you put first things first, if something gets left out, it probably really didn't matter to begin with. Let me ask you something. When you organize something, when you're finally reorganizing the garage, or when you're packing a car, you start with the smallest things, put the smallest things in first, you know, take the smallest bag and put that in the trunk first, and then we'll get to the big stuff eventually, and we'll find, you know what happens when you put the small stuff into a trunk first? Somehow there's no room for the big stuff, but you know what happens when you're packing a car? You start with the biggest things, and you put them in first, and you slide them to the back, and you know what's funny? You can squeeze the smaller things in around the big stuff, and often get more in the trunk in the begin with than if you started with the small stuff, or maybe it's just me. When we begin with the biggest things in life, as often as not, not only do we get the most important things in, the priority they deserve, the place that they deserve in our lives, but we often get more in general in as well. When priorities are rightly ordered, when first things are first, when God gets our first, when God gets our best. Instead of basically and blasphemously taking his things, his life, and the stuff of his creation, and using it for our own purposes, our own gods, our own goals. Like Belshazzar did with God's holy vessels. You know, when Jesus died on the cross, one of the miraculous things that happened that day is that the veil of the temple was rent. The veil of the temple was, remember, the veil of the temple was used to keep the holy and the unholy separate, to keep God's presence behind the veil separate from man and the world on the other side, the unclean and the unholy. And when Jesus dies on the cross, that veil is rent, symbolizing the idea that the way to God was made possible again through this death on the cross, Jesus' blood shed for the forgiveness of sins, and now the way is open to God. And sometimes the mistake that we tend to make and looking at that image, is we tend to think that therefore it's saying that there's really nothing that's particularly holy anymore or sacred. There's no sacred space, sacred things as such. When in reality, the exact opposite is more likely the correct interpretation or understanding. That is that now that Jesus has come and done his work, in a sense, God has reasserted that everything is his, everything is holy, and anything that is not used for him and his glory, our life, our things, our possession, is really used in blasphemous rebellion against him. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. And God and Jesus, the second Adam, has reasserted his reign over reality. It's all his from our life on down. And our job is to use it for his purposes and his glory. Maybe you're here this morning and you recognize that the most basic need you have is to apply the gospel of Jesus Christ, the good news that God did not want the world to stay broken and fallen. And so he became one of us. He became a human being. And then the cross of Christ, the blood that was shed, has made peace. He's made possible the forgiveness of sins and the reconciliation of the world to him. And if you're here this morning and you recognize that the most basic thing you need to do is to give your life back to God, to rededicate your life to what you were created for, relationship with the Almighty. We'd like to help you this morning get right with God through the gospel of Jesus Christ. As you'll come forward, confess with your mouth that Jesus is the Son of God, repenting of your sins. We'll baptize you for the forgiveness of your sins. Maybe you're here this morning, you're a child of God already, but you, like Belshazzar, maybe you're living life in an oblivious way. Maybe you think the consequences of what you're doing and what you're a part of aren't going to come back to haunt you. Maybe you aren't seriously facing or contemplating the enormity of the concept of your life weighed by God in the last day. Maybe there are things in your life right here, right now, that would disqualify you from His verdict of righteousness in the last day. And you know you're facing condemnation. Pray to God to forgive you. However you failed and rebelled against Him once again, He's faithful and just, wants nothing more than to see you in right relationship with Him this morning. If we can help you.